is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and be sure to check us out on Facebook, YouTube, our podcast, etc. Check out our sponsors, Your Dolce Vita with Dawn Matera, Italy Rooting with Letizia Sinisi, and I'll be TVO Casa with Sabrina Franco. And today our guest is Sabrina Moya Chisholm, all the way from South Africa. So first time for a South African. So welcome, Sabrina. Thanks for being here.
Very much. Thank you for having me.
So now I know from, you know, our emails that your family is, I guess your grandparents, all your grandparents are Italian. Is that correct?
Mostly, yes. So my grandparents, my maternal grandparents hail from Trieste, up in Friuli Venezia Giulia, where I lived for many years. And my great-grandparents on my paternal side are from Barano d'Ischia and Forio, also on the island of Ischia.
Oh, that's
how
interesting.
How they got there, I've got no idea.
Yeah, so Ischia, that's interesting because one of my family going way, way back, they had a villa there. I think it's still partially owned by somebody in the family, but it's Villa Piramalo. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but that's on Ischia. And haven't spoken to anyone that had family from there. So that this will be great.
It's not family, but family.
Why did you start and when did you start your research?
So I started the family tree research because my children had a school project that they needed to do for primary school. In fact, I think they were 7, 8. I don't know. They're 26 now. So quite a while ago. And they put together this family tree. And because we're in South Africa, they I don't think they realize that they've actually got a huge actual biological family. So they were putting pictures of Brad Pitt to represent the uncle and, I don't know, famous people. And it got my nose out of joint a little bit. So I asked the much as one would like to have Brad Pitt in the family tree, he's not. So I asked the teacher for a couple of days extension, and I submitted the nucleus of the family tree, and now my tree has grown to 5,976 people. So more a forest than a tree, per se.
I know what you mean. I started like really diving into all the, you know, the cousins of cousins and all of those things, and it's like it just gets overwhelming after a while. It's fun, but it still does get overwhelming.
It's huge. You find out all kinds of things that you may not necessarily want to find out about your family, multiple marriages that run concurrently in different, you know, the uncle is a salesman, so he's got a wife there and a wife there, obviously before Facebook, a couple of defrocked priests, illegitimacy, all of the little secrets come out to bite you.
Well, that's interesting. The defrock piece, that's a good one. So what's that story? I'd love to know that story.
Well, that one's not strictly speaking related to us. We've got two priests in the family. The defrocked one was the father of my cousin's father, or my cousin's grandfather. Mm-hmm. And he was from Hungary. And when I started doing research, well, apart from the fact that he was a priest, so we're not entirely sure how he ended up having children, because he would have, but okay. But one of my blood uncles actually turned to the priesthood, but he wasn't defrocked, after he was widowed and had lost his daughter. in something that happened in Italy. So he actually turned to the church for solace.
Yeah, well, you know, I've heard stories like that before. In fact, growing up, there was a priest that I guess he became a priest in his like 40s or 50s or something like that. But you know, speaking of priests with children, I descend from Pope Paul III, who had several children, who he made cardinals back in the 1500s. So it wasn't unheard of back then. In fact, it was pretty normal.
50s, not. But maybe he wasn't a Catholic priest. I'm not sure why I'm forever assuming that I have to be Catholic. Maybe it's my own upbringing. Pastors are.
Yeah, that's possible. That's possible. So now, did your Italian family, did they migrate to South Africa?
So it's a little bit of a convoluted story. So my grandfather did not migrate at all. He came to South Africa because he was made first violin in the Pact Orchestra in Pretoria. So he brought, seeing that it was a couple of years contract, he brought my mother along in the 60s, 1968, 1969. And she met my father and she stayed in South Africa. And my grandparents went back to Trieste when the contract finished.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting. Yeah, that's something. And so he was contracted to play in the orchestra then, and that's how we wound up there. That's an amazing story.
And so, my grandfather was a violin professor, and my father was a pianist.
Oh, nice. Oh, nice. I try to play the guitar. I play it not very well, but I'm in awe of people who can actually play very, very well, because it's not that easy as it seems.
No, it really isn't. No instrument is.
Your mom stayed. So you were born in South Africa, and obviously all your children were born there too. Yeah.
Indeed, yes. I was born in South Africa. Then I went back to Italy. A lot of backwards and forwards, but I came back finally in 1989, and I haven't moved since.
Oh, now, so did you go to school in Italy, or at least part time?
100%, all of it, in fact.
Really?
And because my mother is of Italian, let's pretend it's Italian extraction. I mean, Trieste, with it being on the corner, on the border with Yugoslavia, was handed backwards and forwards in the wars. So in fact, that side of the family, blood-wise, because we did the DNA test, is not Italian at all. It's more Yugoslavian, Austrian, Germanic. And then also in the 30s, they changed all the surnames to Italianize them. And, of course, that's caused chaos in research, because now you don't know what the original surname was. In the Gazzetta Ufficiale del Regno d'Italia, where they published the changes of surnames, my own grandfather's name, the original name, is spelled in three different ways. So which one's the correct one? And, of course, if you're doing the research now, where do you go? Do I go to look for my documents in the Austrian archives? Do I go in the Yugoslavian archives? Do I go in the archives of Trieste? No one knows. Anyway, and then I went back to Italy and did most of my schooling there, in fact. So I am fluent in Italian and in French, because my father was French. Mm. Also not blood, but politically. So that's what I do now. Now I teach languages. I teach Italian and French.
Oh, that's super. I barely speak English, so we were just in Italy, and I did a lot of pointing. Although I caught on a little bit. You know, when you're there, you know, you're kind of able to listen and hear things. I wish, you know, our parents in America, they didn't teach us Italian. My parents spoke it, and they didn't teach the kids. It's sad. It's sad.
Maybe they were trying to integrate you into the American culture a bit more. That's one of the reasons.
Well, you know, that was part of it, I think. But you know, by the time I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, that whole Italian American stigma thing kind of went away because of the war, and so many Italian Americans fought in the war, they didn't teach us. And then and I said this before, you know, the Poles would have schools to teach their kids. The Jewish, of course, were teaching their kids Hebrew, and Italians didn't do that. So, you know, we're out there, you know, struggling to learn the language or pick up on, and I'm not good in languages. So, you know, I really, really struggle. I can read a little bit now from doing the research and things like that. But you know, going back to the Austrian bit, though, did your grandparents, did they speak more of a Germanic Austrian type of dialect than Italian?
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
So in Trieste, we speak the whole of Italy. I mean, with the history of Italy and only having been unified in 1861, I mean, you know that it used to be run by your various kings, and it had, you know, the king of Spain and Sardinia and Sicilia and all of that. So we very much, each city has got its own dialect, and very often it actually differs wildly from actual Italian. Italian was only made up by Dante when he started writing the Divine Comedy in 1296-97. So if Dante had been from Sicily, Italian would have been very, very different, because mm-hmm. he stuck to Fiorentino. So in Trieste, we speak Triestino, which is quite similar to Venetian in its language. There's a couple of words that I'm not sure, and I really should know better, seeing that I am a language teacher, that sound distinctly like they come from Croatia or Slovenia.
Mm-hmm.
But it's mostly a very soft form of Italian. But yeah, we did not speak Yugoslavian or German per se.
Yeah, and when we were in Bari, just, you know, last week, you know, the driver was from there. My mother's family's Barese, and he was saying things in Italian and then saying them in Barese, and it was like not even close, But he did say that, you know, he said when he was in school, and I guess he's, I would say he was probably 60-ish or something like that. He said when he was in school, they weren't allowed to speak the dialect. They had to speak the Italian. And he said now they're trying to start bringing that back and teaching the dialects again.
It would be an absolute crying shame if the dialects were lost, because I think they are a part of, no, I know they are a part of our identity, even more so than our Italianness, because I do not identify with being Italian as such. I identify as being una mula triestina. Unfortunately, also, and this hasn't died down nearly as much as I would have liked it to, the animosity, let's call it, between the North and the South is still there, especially in the older generations. And that was one of the reasons my grandfather loathed my father for his entire life. I mean, until my grandfather's dying day, my father had to refer to my grandfather as Professor Pacchiori.
Really? Wow. Wow, that's something.
Because my father's family, his mother, in fact, her parents, which actually leads me to, I wanted to ask you a question about one of your sponsors there. Her my great-grandfather, Michele Rocco Matera and Carolina Mattarese, they came from Barano di Ischia and Forio. And of course, that made my father automatically a peasant in my grandfather's eyes. And of course, you know, he's from the north and not worthy of his only daughter.
what's so interesting about that now, you know, my parents, my mother's family were farmers from Torito in Puglia. And my father's mother was from two very noble families and probably one of the most noble families in the South, Caracciolo. And, you know, when I was doing this research, it dawned on me that had they been in Italy,
it wouldn't have happened.
Nothing. Yeah. Yeah. And what's interesting about it is my mother's mom, was a very boisterous kind of presence and wanted nothing but had to have the kids hanging on her, you know, the 23 grandchildren. That's all that she loved it. And my father's mother was a very, very stately woman, very quiet, very soft-spoken. And I never understood until I realized where she came from. Her background.
It's intrinsic. We so if both you and I had to originate from Trieste, then we would geolocate ourselves even more specifically. And I would tell you, I come from Viale 20 Settembre, which is one of the streets in the center. So if you come from anywhere in the periphery, now we've, you know.
Right. Yeah. I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. And in fact, my uncle from Torito, he met his wife and he explained it in his story that even though my aunt was from not a rich family, she was still a level above him. And it was only after he came back from the army that her parents allowed him to court her and they eventually got married. But he was very specific about he wasn't allowed to like talk to her even.
Yes, that's not as far-fetched as one would think.
So back to your DNA and what you found, what kind of interesting stories that cropped up that you were like, wow, this is amazing, or this is a big surprise?
So my daughter's DNA surprises me quite greatly. So DNA wise, I'm a mother of three twins, pigeon pair, boy and a girl, and a singleton. And seeing the differences in their DNA is phenomenal. My daughter, who is blonde, has got a great percentage of her DNA as reflecting as Southern Italian or Greek. Clearly, it must be from my father's side, because it certainly cannot be from my maternal line. Cannot. My son, the other twin, in fact, is more Italian than I am, percentage-wise.
So these are the twins that are so different.
100%.
Wow, that's something. See, now that surprises me, because you wouldn't think that twins, even if they weren't,
Identical.
identical. Yeah, you wouldn't think that they would be that different. That's incredible. That's a surprise.
So if you want, I'll send you later the graphics from MyHeritage so that you can actually see what I'm talking about. But I think DNA-wise, the one thing that surprised me more than anything else, fine, you know, the Greek, the Italian, I mean, we know we're all related to some extent. But I'm going to use this term loosely, of course, but the incestuousness of Europe baffled my brain. So my husband has a half sister. We are currently trying extremely hard to find out who her father is. But her father is either Hungarian extraction, Polish extraction, somewhere there. And she was born in South Africa of a Scottish mother and this Hungarian Polish dude. DNA wise, my sister-in-law and I are ninth cousins. Now, I know that doesn't count for much, but goodness. How interlaced were the cultures?
Yeah, well, my children are adopted, and my son is my wife's fifth cousin, because her father was Puerto Rican and his birth father was Puerto Rican. And when I was doing it, I said, Matthew's your cousin, fifth cousin. But yeah, it's true. I mean, I think we're all a lot closer than I guess we perceive, right? So now I have to ask you, because it's interesting to me, what was it like growing up Italian in South Africa, especially, I guess in the 60s, 70s or whatever? Was there any prejudice against Italians there, or you just kind of fit right in?
No. Well, I was only in South Africa until I was about 6 or 7. And I wasn't particularly aware of much going on, but the Italian contingency in South Africa is strong. There's a lot of us here.
Really?
I'm 4 kilometers from the Italian club.
Really? Yeah. See, now I suppose I shouldn't be surprised by that, but I am, because it's not something that when we think about Italian migration, we don't think of South Africa, if you know what I mean.
But I think my biggest problem is that I've never really, I don't fit in France, but I speak French because my father's parents were born in Algeria and Morocco. So in France, they call us the Black Feet, Les Pieds Noirs. I'm not quite Italian because I wasn't really born there. I'm not quite South African because I've got a French nationality. So I'm never home.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. I see what you mean. Yeah, you're really kind of just out there, right?
There's too many different cultures, too many different personalities, if we want to even call them that. I feel like I'm vaguely schizophrenic, because when I'm French, I'm French. When I'm Italian, I'm Italian. When I'm South African, I'm South African. And they are different. And this is one of the things my children noticed. And children can be so dumb when they are small. They actually told me one of my tells. So if they asked for something, if I said to them no, apparently I was still open to negotiation. But if I said no, that was a hard no. And then they knew they couldn't try their luck. And they discovered this and were very proud of themselves and came to tell me. And of course, I used it a little bit against them.
Oh, that's funny. That's so funny. And so how about, so now, but how about your husband? Has his, was his family in South Africa for a long time?
His family came to South Africa from Scotland in the beginning of the 1900s because his grandmother fell pregnant out of wedlock, and they were trying to avoid sending her to one of those mothers' homes. So when they arrived in South Africa with their pregnant daughter, they declared Norman as their son and not their grandchild.
Yeah, and that happened a lot in those days. That happened a lot in those days. And do you know if she eventually, I mean, did they eventually tell her the truth, or did she figure it out, or did they know?
Well, that's actually a very sad story. I don't think Uncle Norman, and he's not even an uncle, but he was known as Uncle because of this dynamic. Uncle Norman and the family eventually did the math and realized that the mother couldn't possibly have given birth in her 60s. So eventually math won. But his mom was apparently very, very much in love with the father of her child. And he was writing letters to her, and her mother was hiding the letters. And on her deathbed, she told her daughter to go and look for those letters that were hidden in some box. Margaret Chisholm never married, and she lived with her son Norman as her brother.
Wow, that's so sad. Yeah,
and raised everyone else's children, including my mother-in-law.
Wow, that's a sad story. That really
there's heartbreaks when you do the family tree. So my French side moved from Spain to Algeria, and that's how they became French because of the colonization, to escape some war. And then the woman arrives in Algeria, gives birth, and dies in childbirth. I mean, perhaps she should have taken her chances with the war. There's some really, really sad stories out there. And they crop up when you start doing the research. But
Yeah. My great grandfather, he was illegitimate from my father's family, and I can't figure out the story. Again, nobody seems to know. There's one rumor that there was somebody in the family that had an affair with the maid, which is possible because they were a noble family. But the interesting thing about that is the records in Italy. One of the genealogies sent me these, I call them like a birth card or something like that. It's not an actual birth record. It's just a card that has the mother, the father, the date of the person and the birth date and the person's name. And my great grandfather, Nicola Piramalo, he's got two of these cards with two different women as his mother. One woman, I believe, was his mother, his birth mother. The second woman was my great grandfather's wife, all the other children, all my great grandfather's brothers and sisters have her as the mother. And the only thing I could piece together is that somehow, because he was from a rich, noble family, that he was able to get the record changed somehow. But that's the only thing I could figure out. He must have been very young when my great-grandfather was, my great-great-grandfather must have been very young when my great-grandfather was born. But can't piece it together.
And someone out there, a lot of people out there knew, but they have taken their secrets to the grave. And now with the advent of DNA, we are digging up everyone else's skeletons.
Yes.
Stuff that tries to hide.
But that kind of, you know, the way I look at it is, that kind of, in a way, because I'm a big history person, it's fascinating to me to know what these people did and how they reacted in situations and what happened, because it's kind of like almost a connection to your life, if you know what I mean.
I do. And also, they before you know the stories, I mean, these people are just names and dates. And I mean, with an Italian heritage, I mean, I'm sure you know, we kind of tend to name all our children, you know, Antonio, son of Antonio, that is the son of the other Antonio. And then it becomes just this blur. And the moment you start looking at their history and what their stories are, it kind of makes them more real.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The you know, the more information you get, and if you find something like a will or a deed or something like that, it's even better. But you know, my great grandfather was Nicola. So my father was named Nicholas. And when I started finding the family in Italy, everybody's got the same name. I mean, my mother's family I knew because I knew who they were, but my father had so many cousins with the name Nicola, and then, you know, their children's children all have the Nicola. And the amazing thing was, one of my cousins that I just met just last week, 2 weeks ago, he was, his father was, had the same name as my father. They were born 3 years apart. I don't know if they knew of each other. I suspect that they didn't, but I'm not sure. My name is Robert. His name is Roberto, purely coincidental, because there's no reason for us to be named this Robert.
Have you noticed that synchronicity as well? I find that absolutely fascinating, because now it is said, I don't know how true this is, I haven't delved that deeply into it, that everyone that has the surname Matera will come from the same, comes from the same family and the same place. So now my great grandfather, he was Michele Rocco Matera. And there was a poet, or an author here in South Africa, whose name was Don Matera. And we spoke a few times when he was still alive, but there was this very weird synchronicity, because Sabrina is not a family name. It was a movie, and my father liked the actress. He liked the name, I got the name. But strangely enough, Don Matera's daughter, he also named Sabrina.
Hmm.
And it's not one of the most common names out there.
Right, nice, yeah. Especially an Italian family. Yeah, it's not really, yeah.
So I found that very interesting. And if I haven't quite figured out how myself and Don Matera were related, but I'm going to have to presume that it's from one of the sons of Sebastiano Matera, and you know, so I find that the synchronicity of names has actually recurred quite often, and not in branches that know each other.
Yes, right. Yeah. Well, that's why I said, like, you know, Robert and Robert, and then, you know, his son, of course, is Nico after his grandfather, and my daughter is Nicole, and my nephew is Nicholas. So it's quite by accident, you know. But I'll send you Dawn's email so you could contact her, because it's possible that, you know, if what you say is they all come from the same family, you may have a connection there.
I've heard, but I haven't quite gone that deep. Yes.
Well, yeah, it's. I have to walk away every once in a while because your brain starts to get fried, if you know what I mean.
100%. I'm with you then.
So, one final thing before we go is, because my family thinks I'm crazy, what does your family think, especially your children? Do they appreciate it, or do they think, oh, mom's off on going off looking for dead people again?
They don't understand the excitement of finding a puzzle piece I didn't even know existed. They really don't particularly care right now, but they neither did I when I was young. I wish I had made notes of everything that my grandmother said, but I didn't. And now she's passed, so I can't ask. I think they're all playing hot potato with the yearly MyHeritage subscription, because I don't think any one of them wants to inherit that.
That's funny. Yeah, I wish that I had asked my grandparents questions. I mean, my grandparents, both my parents are at the younger end of the family. So my grandparents are already, you know, well, old, my age, you know, close to it when they, you know, when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, and I didn't think to ask them anything back then. You know, I wish I had. And even, you know, some of my aunts and uncles.
Even if they did tell you, you'd probably sit there going, oh, you've said this 17 times before.
Exactly. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you taking the time, and, you know, good luck, you know, getting to 10,000 from 5,000.
Thank you. I don't know if that's a bit of a blessing or a curse.